Before we begin, let's take a few moments to worship the Supreme One, the Infinitely Compassionate One, the Sublime One, the Tathagata, by chanting the Namaskara 3 times, all together and with me. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. How is everyone doing this week? How was your practice? I think last week we had an amazing event, and I would like to talk about that as well. But before that, I really wanted to show you how lucky we are. Now, 2 weeks back, on Tuesday, we had Possum Poya. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to join the Akineyu. I had to travel outside the monastery. And that's when I really realized how lucky we are to be living in Sri Lanka. Because in my entire life, never once have I ever been to a Dantala. So for those of you who may not know, yeah, on Poson Poya, and also through Vesak and Poson, people come together and give these massive, you can almost call it danas, to literally anyone who goes by on the streets, whether they are in a car, whether they're walking, even if they are cycling or doing whatever they're doing on their journey to work, to wherever they're going, they are willing to give whatever. So, like I said, it was my first time. It was actually my first time I've ever been outside in Poson. And I'll tell you, we were stopped just as we turned around, and we were, I think, going just couple of meters, we were stopped. The car was stopped. And we asked, why did you stop us? We were handing out some drinks, right? Some, if I remember correctly, it was some fruit juice. Would you like some? Now, luckily, this was before 12. So the driver asked me, and I said, why not? Because what they don't realize, what they realize, and maybe not realize, is what they are doing. Because it's a Sri Lankan tradition, I think. I've never heard of many other countries that actually do the same thing, you know, go out their way and just give to anyone who passes by. I think it's a very Sri Lankan culture, it's in our culture, it's in our tradition. Which means, you know, the actual idea of giving is woven into the very culture, the very nature of the people of Sri Lanka. So they even stopped our car and asked us, right? And that was our first time, right? That was my first experience. Going down another 500, maybe not 500, probably like 100 meters. Again, this little car was stopped. We were kind of in a rush, but besides the point, we were stopped. And another group of people came up to us and asked the same thing. And dotted throughout our journey, from A to B, I think we saw almost 50 different places where they're giving 50 different things to random strangers. And it made me realize, you know, the Buddha's Dhamma, although it may not be so spread wide and far and wide, and not everyone is, you know, maybe not a Buddhist or maybe not even a practicing Buddhist, but the idea of giving is there. The idea, so I was thinking about this, and I was asking some of our monks, like, where did this idea of Dantala come from? And I was given a most extensive history lesson It started because normally, back in the past, before we had cars, we had, carts driven by bulls or horses. I don't think there was horses, many horses in Sri Lanka, but by bulls and cattle and whatnot. And so they had, unlike cars that you had just have to feed petrol or diesel and you can drive on until the tank is empty, animals get tired. Humans get tired. So there are actually places around, many, many places around Sri Lanka where they'll have a temporary, almost a rest house, where anyone, regardless of who they are, is able to come, stop for a while, stop for a day or two, and then resume their journey. There'll be a pot of water, which is clean drinking water, which anyone can do one of two things. Either take some water or fill the water. And so in these rest houses, people would set up these, you can almost say, these dhanis. I would actually use the word dhani because it is a dhani. Although we tend to use the word dhani for, giving alms to the Mahasangha. No, dhani is the act of giving, the act of repaying a debt. So this is a dhani. This is an almsgiving. So they'll set up a table, and I think from my history lesson, I was told that it was usually maybe a cup of tea, right? Cup of plain tea and a bit of jaggery. And so the word dhansala actually means what? Dhani and shalava, meaning hall. So the dhani hall, just like we have, they have it dotted across Sri Lanka. And so it's amazing to see that, people, especially on Vesak and Poson, would go out their way and spend many, I don't know how much, just to give, expecting nothing back. Now, the next Sunday, I was very fortunate to be able to join some of our monks and go to a Dhamma school that we conduct in the monastery. And not only there, and also in our monastery itself, we conducted a dhansal as well. So that was my first actual, although I didn't do much, my first actual giving dhansal. And every time I just realized that, every person that I saw either taking or giving always had this idea of how can I give? How can I give what I have away? So I'll tell you something that I saw. So in one of the dhansalas that I was able to join, I saw a man take three cups of juice. Now, I was thinking, right, why would he take three cups? Right, he took three cups and filled it into a bottle. Why was that? Now, some people can say he filled the bottle up so he can, on his journey to wherever he's going, he could drink all three cups. But I disagree. The three cups were for three different people. Himself, his significant other, and maybe a child. So even when they go to a dancer, they're not thinking about, oh, how can I get as much as I possibly can? No, how can I give? This is why, the Buddha, this is how the Buddha's Dhamma can change people, change lives. Now, what they are doing is a merit. They may not know exactly what they're doing. Maybe it's because, they've seen friends or seen family, seen uncles and aunts and big people, or when they were younger, saw them give these dhansalas. So they may not know exactly what they're doing, but they are giving. And when they give, they are giving wholeheartedly. I mean, you can't give a dhansala expecting something back. I'm gonna give you I'm gonna give you a plate of rice, and I expect you to give me money. No, they give without expecting. They give with no expectation whatsoever. And they enjoy giving. This is why they are paving the path to where? They are paving the path to Nibbana. Knowingly or unknowingly. This is why we have, I think it's very, I'm very fortunate to be able to have learned, seen, joined these sort of traditions. This part of this culture. So it was my first time, even though I've lived in Sri Lanka for now, some time now, it was my first time joining a Dhansala. And something else I learned from my history lesson is, we don't say we're going to a Dhansala. What do we say? What do we say? We worship Dhansalas. Even that itself. We don't go to, we don't say, oh, I'm going to Dhansala. No, I'm going to go worship a Dhansala. See, we're very fortunate to be, well, in a country where, giving is part and parcel of our culture. Like we talked about in the New Year's, again, it's giving. It's about giving. Vesak, it's about giving. Dhansala is about giving. The start, the first step. And not only the first step, it's also a perfection, one of the 10 perfections. Something that needs to be filled before they become an arahant. So I wanted to share that. And also I wanted to also rejoice in the merits that we did last week as well. So last week we didn't have the English sermon because we were laying the foundation stones for the new Dhamma hall. I mean, I was thinking, so I was very fortunate to be able to think and help out in this event. And whilst I was thinking, the first idea that came to me is, this is where the Dhamma will be preached. When you know the joy people feel when they are digging a hole in search of water and they find a spring, a natural spring. The joy that people feel, because why? That means almost an endless supply of water. Just imagine you're, let's say, crossing a desert, got no water. Right? You had a bottle, it's finished. Your tongue is parched. You're almost swallowing your tongue. And so you decide to dig to see if there's any water. You dig and dig and dig and dig and you find a natural spring. That was the same feeling that I felt when I got to help, or when I went and placed my copper leaf into this foundation. Same thing. In a world that is parched, that is filled and which is in constant battle with itself, we are digging and planting a fountain, a natural spring where the water of Dhamma will be able to quench the thirst of hundreds of millions of people. So through my mind, every step I took, every letter I wrote on this golden leaf, that's what I thought. Because this is a place where the Dhamma will be preached. This is hopefully a place where, the first arahant of the monastery will attain his enlightenment. This is where, the journey of until the journey to Nibbana, the first steps will be taken in that very hall. How extremely meritorious we are. How extremely meritorious we are to be able to place a foundation stone or to place this copper leaf. I mean, I am a very, you can say a very skeptical person in that aspect. The first question I asked when I was told to write this leaf is, how long does copper last? Right? And luckily, you know, you can go search on Google. Copper, how long does copper last? And Google gave me the answer. It can last from 20 years to indefinitely, and depending on the conditions and whatnot. But what I realize is it doesn't matter how long it lasts, because it's not a copper leaf that we're putting inside. It was never a copper leaf, because it's very nice to think of the story that, you know, in another 500 years, when the Dhammo collapse, the Dhammo collapses, right, and some architects, not architects, these archaeologists start digging this site and find these copper leaves, and they read it, and they realize it's nice to think of the story, and I do agree that it's a very beautiful story that they read it and they realize, oh, in this area, in this place, there used to be hundreds of thousands of people who practiced this path, and maybe some of these people have even attained Nibbana. It's lovely to think about it, but in reality, what we're doing is we're placing a determination inside this very building. A determination that's set by each and every one of us. So yes, maybe an archaeologist will find these copper leaves if we preserve them right. But more importantly, there's a determination in every leaf there is. Now, if we were to put hundreds of magnets together, we get to make what? A stronger magnet. Every determination that we make is a magnet. A magnet that's able to draw the merits of ourselves and the people around us. Therefore, we're creating a force. We're creating an unstoppable force for people, whoever, you know. I wouldn't be surprised that people would come to the building and sit down and one day just, you know, just sit down and listen to one sermon, and just like the time of the Buddha, they are able to, you know, understand the Dhamma in one sermon. I wouldn't be surprised. Because every brick that's laid, including the foundation, is laid with determination. The copper leaves, determination. All of this is energy. So we are extremely lucky. And I think we are all very lucky to have participated, if we had. If you are unable to participate, at least you can rejoice. Because rejoicing itself is taking part. Because something that people always fail to realize is that rejoicing is also taking part. Yes, you may not have put something physically into the foundation. You may not have written this copper leaf and put it into the foundation. However, rejoicing is what is also part of it. Because you also helped make it. Your thoughts, you had expended energy. Because me writing on a copper plate, right, writing on a copper plate is only meritorious because I'm expending energy with the intention of what? With good intention. Therefore, it's a merit. Someone who's building the building is also what? The only reason it's meritorious is because you're expending energy with good intention. Someone who's rejoicing is also what? Expending energy with good intention. So all three of them, whether, you know, you say something, do something, or think something, is all merits. All part of this massive merit that we can all accumulate. So, for those of you who may not have been able to participate, rejoice. Rejoice in every single sermon, every single, you know, every single vibration that is set to come out of anyone's mouth that expounds the pure Dhamma. The merits belong to you. You're able to collect all that merit. And they'll take you to the supreme bliss of nirvana. So that's something that I really wanted to remind all of you as well, because it's something that is very, very special. Okay, so today I wanted to continue on our discussion that we talked about last time as well. But also, more importantly, I wanted to talk about something that we feel to make us very unique. Now, because we talk about this jati, we talk about ego and all this, but there's something that no matter how hard, I mean, see, the more we understand about ego, the more we understand about jati, the more you realize how it can fall into every single moment. Last Thursday, the monks, Anagarikas, Anagarikas, were able to listen to a sermon given by Guru Hanguru. And I remember coming out of the sermon thinking, wow, there is so much to do. Because ego is in everything. But I really wanted to focus today on something that we automatically personalize. And something that we use every single day. And they say it's more powerful than any weapon in this world. Because it has the power to destroy and the power to create. The power to trap and the power to relieve. That's the voice. If we were to take a recording, we are always, you know, something that we find very difficult to do is hear our own voice. I don't know if you've ever tried this, but you know, you take a video of yourself and you listen to it again, re-listen to it, and you think, do I actually sound like this? So I remember, you know, when I first started doing sermons, right? And I get to re-listen to the sermon. And I think, wait, is that how I sound like? And it's like, oh, why do I sound like this? Because we automatically personalize. This is my voice. You are hearing my voice. And so even though if we were to take a recording, you automatically think that's mine. This is my voice. It's something that's unique, something that can only belong to me. And so I want to show you what a voice truly is. What makes your voice? So to start off, you know, we have to start off with, you know, the mechanics. How do we speak? Now, the idea of language and the idea of speaking is very, very complex. And I don't want to get into every single detail because we don't need to. It's not you know, necessary to get into every nook and cranny of how does speaking work. But it's very important to understand the overall general idea. So, you know, to speak, we need to have a mouth, of course. We need to have a tongue. I think those of you who've ever, you know, ever had, you know, a tooth removed, realize how important your tongue is to talk. Because sometimes, you know, your tongue becomes numb and you can't talk properly because you need your tongue. So you need your tongue. Now, and those of you who know biology, there is this voice box that we all have. A voice box that has two pieces of tissues, almost. Very thin pieces of tissues. And then we have the most important organ, or one of the most important organs, which we call the lungs. See, the reason why I'm talking about this is because I want you to not only think about your voice, but also think about the idea of breathing. Because, you know, we believe that it's me who does everything. I am the one living. But when you really look at it, even breathing itself is something that we don't really do. So this is, we're going to do some biology, but don't worry, it's not going to be too difficult. So I want to start off with the lungs. Now, I don't know if you've ever learned the biology of a lung, but every time they talk about lung, they compare it to what? What do they compare lungs to? They compare lungs to balloons. Now, fortunately, I was very prepared, and I do have something with me. Brought out a bit of a prop. Does someone want to choose a color? I've got many colors here. For this demonstration purpose, we're going to use green. Balloon. This is basically like our lungs. Now, of course, to use a balloon, we have to blow. But for lungs, we don't need to blow. What happens is there is a piece of muscle which is very, very useful that sits just underneath. It's called the diaphragm. And every time it contracts, for us to blow a balloon, what we have to do is we have to put in the pressure. But for us to breathe, what do you need? No, the diaphragm just needs to contract. And physics does the rest. When the diaphragm contracts, here has low pressure, outside has high pressure, and physics says everything goes from high pressure to low pressure, filling the lungs with air. And so when the diaphragm contracts, the air is relieved. And so breathing is basically this thing, contracting, relaxing, contracting, relaxing. Now, when we think about breathing, what do we think? Breathing is to do with but actually, there are actually other muscles there. But most importantly, it's the diaphragm that does it. Diaphragm that sits under your lungs. A diaphragm that sits under your lungs. So these are two balloons that expand according to the pressure, according to this diaphragm. Now, how many of you, when breathing, think about your diaphragm? How many of you, when breathing, do you think about your diaphragm? Think, okay, diaphragm, contract. Diaphragm, relax. Diaphragm, contract. Diaphragm, relax. We don't think about it. It is involuntary. It's something that our body does completely by itself. But then you could say, well, I can control my breathing as well, so I can take a deep breath. No, you can't take a deep breath. What you can do is your brain can send a message to your diaphragm to say, contract as much as possible, and the intercostal muscles and whatnot, to expand and contract. And you can only send a signal to the body for it to, take a deep breath. But in reality, but that is the reality. But in your mind, what does your mind think? I'm the one who is breathing. We feel that we're taking the breath inside. We feel we're taking the breath inside when actually we're just creating a pressure difference. So are you the one who's breathing? Or is breathing something that happens? Breathing is something that happens all the time. It just happens. Now, after the breath, so this is breathing. But for us to speak, we have to use this voice box. And this voice box, like I said, is just two pieces of tissue that can change in size. So this is basically like our lungs, right? Our lungs that hold what? That hold the pressure. So when the diaphragm comes in, that's almost as if I'm just creating space for air to come in. Unfortunately, this is not a lung, right? We have to force air inside. Now, what makes each and every one of us different is that, we have different sized lungs, right? We have different cavities, right? We also have a different, lengths of the trachea and lengths of different things. However, we all have the common structure of the windpipe, and there, and also we have a box which we call the voice box. Now, when I was thinking about this, you know, like when we speak, the voice box is something that just does what? The voice box speaks, agree or not. The voice box speaks, agree or not. No, the voice box doesn't speak. The voice box does one thing, right? And we can do the same thing here. I can artificially create a voice box. All I have to do. Now, all I need to do is make something vibrate. And that makes noise. All I have to do is make something vibrate, and that's what makes noise. Your voice box doesn't speak. The balloon doesn't make noise. All the balloon does is what? All the balloon does is what? What does the balloon do? The balloon does nothing. You do what? Nothing. The balloon, thanks to, you know, pressure, is squeezing. Oh, not the balloon. You know, pressure is creating this force that's pushing, that's trying to get this air to come out. High pressure. Outside is low pressure. High pressure wants to go to low pressure because we're always looking for an equilibrium. Same with the mind. Apart from that, if we have a small pole, so if we do a cross-section of the voice box, this is basically what it looks like. And these two things, right, when air goes by, will vibrate. Will vibrate depending on how big this hole is, how loose or tight this skin is. So, again, you can control how loud, how quiet, how high, how low the sound is, according to what? According to this. So is it the balloon that makes the sound? So are you the one speaking? So this is speaking, right? This is speaking. You aren't the one who is speaking, right? All you're doing is creating, technically, if you want to place yourself somewhere in this process, there are only two places you can place yourself. Either in physics, right? You could put yourself, you can say, I am physics. Well, technically, that's the only place you can put yourself. You can only say, I am physics. Because this contracts, or actually this relaxes, which is just creating pressure. This, again, according to electrical signals, will either constrict, relax, make this wider, make this smaller, and will create sound. So let's see if this balloon sounds different, because it's a different type of balloon. So if I was to let go, we can hear a different sound. So who is actually speaking? That is the process of speaking. That is what helps us to speak. Actually, no. Scratch that. It doesn't help us to speak. That is what? That is speaking. Each and every one of us has this mechanism inside of us. The same mechanism that we have, you know, the same mechanism of a balloon is the same mechanism of us speaking. So I do have a video that I want to show you. And don't worry, it's not biology. It's not like the insides of a voice box. I really did want to show that. But I wanted to show you how even a balloon, you can vary the sound, the pitch of a balloon to make so-called music. So the next time you breathe, I want you to imagine a balloon. The next time you speak, I want you to imagine what? balloon. Because who is speaking and who is breathing? Who is speaking and who is breathing? If it's you who's speaking, it's the balloon that is speaking. If it's you who's breathing, a balloon can breathe. But it's not. It's not. It cannot be a balloon that speaks or a balloon that breathes. But no matter how it, for as long as you're aware, you'll realize that this is not my voice. Because don't forget, only thing I can do with this balloon is create what? What can I do with this balloon? The only thing I can do with this balloon is do what? Create? Create? Create what? Sounds? I can't create sounds. That's something that you do. Don't blame the balloon. That's something that you do. What can this balloon actually do? Only thing it can do is what? Vibrate. So if you only if you were aware, you realize that this isn't my voice. This isn't my voice. This instead is what? This process creating a vibration, which creates a thought in your mind. A thought where, you know, Rupa Vedana Sanya Sankara Vijnana, and the Vijnana arises saying, I can hear a voice. I can hear the word the. I can hear the word voice. Not that I am speaking or I am listening to someone speak. See, I really want you right now to actually focus on this, right? To really, really try to understand this. Because for as long as you're aware, you'll see this. But the moment you step off, you're hearing what? You're hearing me speak. But for the moment you start to think about the actual process behind this, the balloon vibrating, or the balloon vibrating at different frequencies, this process of speaking, if for as long as you're aware of it, you realize that. Or your hearing is what? A cause and effect process. That there cannot be someone who is talking. Instead, it's a process, a natural process. You know, we feel that we're separate from nature, but we are part of nature. This is nature just taking a journey. That's why a balloon can do the same thing. That's why, you know, animals can make noise. That's why the wind can make noise, because it's not something that you do, it's something that happens. All you need is something that can vibrate. Now, can I have. No, we'll have someone else below later. Now, depending on your balloon size, balloon thickness, balloon, the size of the spout, I want to say, would. Oh, this thing here, right? Would change the timbres, change the pitch, change all of that. That's part of the balloon, not you. Like, for example, some people when they wake up in the morning, when people wake up in the morning, sometimes, you know, it's like, you know, sometimes when you're sick, when you have a cold, do you sound like you? I think about it. Do you sound like you? No, because you have a blocked nose, you sound different. If you have lots of phlegm, you sound different. And I remember, you know, sometimes back when I was late, you know, sometimes when you get sick, you know, sometimes you get really deep voices. So I'd be going around saying, you know, I sound really deep, and it's such a great thing because I'm sick. Why do we feel that that is our voice? So which one is our true voice? The voice with phlegm Well, the voice without phlegm. Is it the voice with a blocked nose or without a blocked nose? Is it the voice that, you know, sometimes when you're short of breath, your voice sounds different. When you take a long to a deep breath, your voice sounds different. Unfortunately, you know, we don't have helium. If we had helium, we could have done something completely different. Add helium instead of oxygen and your voice sounds what? Higher for those, you know, those of you who ever, you know, decided to ruin a child's toy by taking the helium will know that helium will make their voice sound higher. Whereas other gases, heavier gases, will make your voice sound lower. So which one is your correct voice? Which one is your correct voice? All of them is what? All of them is what? Nature. All of them is what? Part of nature. See, all we have to do is we have to understand what is actually happening. Every moment we're trying to understand what is actually happening. That's all we have to do. I mean, the actual understanding of it, it's very easy. But, you know, trying to focus on it, trying to always put our focus onto this nature, the nature of nature, is very difficult. Because right now, who's speaking? Don't you feel that I'm speaking? Don't you feel that you're talking? Again, the moment you focus on, oh, it's a process. Now what? Oh, who's speaking? No, speaking is happening. Who's talking? No, talking is happening. But the moment you flip off the switch of awareness, mind being mindfully aware, now what? I'm speaking, you're listening, and we're all having a great time together. See, this is the thing. We have to be really aware. Did we fix our technical issue? Not yet. See, this is your merits. I don't know. I had a video lined up, but no. Instead, we got to see balloons, but we don't see balloons in action. So again, I really want you to do is whenever you start speaking, to try to envision that it's almost a balloon making noise, a balloon making a sound. Because I want you to understand that it's not you who's speaking. This is why you can make different sounds according with the balloons. High pitch, low pitch. High pitch, low pitch, and various other pitches. Only because it's not you who's speaking. Just take one cause away. Take the actual lung away, can you speak? Take the diaphragm away, can you speak? Take the voice box away, can you speak? Take away your tongue, can you speak? You know, next time you're talking with someone that you trust, right? Try to talk without your tongue. Try to just keep your tongue relaxed and try to talk. Or, you know, try to keep your jaw in one place and try to talk. See if you can still talk the same way that you talk normally, because you realize that talking is what cause and effect. That talking is completely not something that you control. That talking isn't your, it isn't your voice. So the next time your voice goes hoarse or you have a sore throat and you can't talk properly, understand, you couldn't have talked before. You weren't the one talking before either. It's just what? A balloon in action. It's only a balloon action. Are we able to play the video? So if I were to show you a video of someone who's singing, you should be just as surprised someone can sing. Because that's the same thing. You know, if I show you a video of a very famous singer, I don't know, sing a song, you should be just as, wow, people can play a balloon. Same thing, you should be, same surprise should happen. Wow, people can sing. Same process. But yeah, we feel these to be two different things. That's why, you know, you hear in the background people are laughing. Because why? People can play anything. So this is the thing. I really want, this is something that I want you to practice. Because a question that's frequently asked is, how can I practice when I'm talking? How can I practice when I'm talking? Or how can I practice when I'm listening? This is your practice. When you're talking, try to see this. Try to see a balloon. I wanted to like add straws and whatnot, but it was going to take too long. And so I thought, you know, it's easier just to have a balloon. Because you can make anything talk for as long as you have what? Something that vibrates. Because remember, these words aren't something that the balloon can create. You can't create words. The only thing you can create is what? Vibration. And that goes into the ear of a beholder, someone who something that has an ear, something that can perceive sound, or can perceive vibrations, and then there's sound. Then there's words. For example, if your ear doesn't work, no matter how much I'm vibrating here, you won't be able to hear it. No matter how much I'm vibrating here, if your mind doesn't arise with hearing conscious, with a hearing mind. No matter if I'm, you know, vibrating with large amplitudes, I'm screaming, your mind will not perceive it. So this is a beautiful process. A beautiful process. Because if you think about this, right? The reason why this works, because just having this process is not enough. For you to talk, just having this process is not enough. We normally think that just this is enough to talk. No, there has to be more. There is a sender, and there also has to be what? For talking to happen, there also has to be what? Also has to be a receiver. If there is no ear slash eardrum and the brain and whatnot, then there still can't be talking. See, when we talk about talk, when we think about talking, we're thinking about how I'm talking, right? I'm the one who's talking. No, talking can only happen if there is a listener. See, this is why, you know, this is why if we can't talk to someone else, people tend to do what? Talk to themselves. Because you can only talk if there is something to receive. That's why, you know, as people grow older and their hearing starts to, they start to lose their hearing. What do they tend to do? They tend to talk louder so they can hear themselves. And that's why, you know, if someone goes completely deaf, sometimes they can't talk. They go mute because they can't hear themselves. So the reason why, you know, when if you take a recording of yourself, right, of yourself talking, and you re-listen to it, the reason why it sounds different is because you're hearing your voice not just through your ears, or not just through the sound waves of the air. You're hearing your own voice through your bones. That's why if you were to put your hand on your cheek, whenever you talk, you can feel your bones vibrate. Bones vibrate, and because it's not the ear that can hear, it's this eardrum that vibrates that goes and does this massive process, and in the end, do you perceive sound? So speaking isn't just a one thing; it's a massive process. So for someone to have or to someone for someone to speak, you need this process, you need that process. But also, you need the process of what? On both ways, you need a process of what? Need the process of? For all of this to happen, you need the process of thoughts. If you don't have a mind, if you don't have a mind to process, neither can you speak, neither can you hear, neither can talking happen. I mean, we are extremely lucky to have a mind. To have a mind that can perceive. Imagine we're just a body with no mind. What would the purpose be? Imagine you are a body with no mind. What would the purpose be? Only thing that will happen is, nothing. Because the mind is the most important organ of your process or of the process of living. The mind is the most important. If the mind was not there, nothing would happen. No perceiving will happen. Because for there to be talking, an idea has to arise. From where? Where do ideas come from? So the idea that in my that I have right now came from where? My mind. Oh, not my mind, the mind. Came from the mind. The mind, okay, where does and that mind then perceives an idea and then finds a way to express this idea. And the mind arises with the idea of either giving a kaya sankara, right, action, vachi sankara, almost like thought action, thought words, and thoughts. Kaya sankara, vachi sankara, mano sankara, thoughts. And then it executes. So the actual idea of or the actual idea of talking is what? Kaya sankara. Because all of this is something that we don't control. Our mind says, okay, say the word the. And that sends a signal to the brain. The brain sends a signal to this process, and the process will, the diaphragm will relax, the voice box will change to give rise to the word the. But for that to happen, you need to have a mind that had this idea. So where does the idea talking start? Where does the idea of talking start? Where does it start? The idea of talking. Some sort of vipaka had to come, right? Some sort of vipaka had to come. That vipaka came from where? Where did that vipaka come from? Some other mind with ignorance that stored this energy back. Therefore, the idea of talking doesn't start anywhere. Where does it end? Does it end when this person hears? Is that where talking ends? No, that energy, the energy of talking is stored. The energy of listening is also what? Stored. So there is no start and end. This is just a cycle that continues to go. Cycle that starts, that you can't really pinpoint a start and an end. This is a constant cycle. The only thing we can do is break this cycle by understanding that, it's not me. It's not me. It's not me who's talking. It's not me who's listening. Talking happens. Listening also what happens. Something that I really want to share with all of you as well is, just like talking, we also have this you can almost say this So the other day I wanted to show you how ego actually affects your life. And when I mean ego, I'm not talking about, this, oh, I am a big person, I'm a great person. No, I'm talking about this sense of self. I really want to show you one point that shows, how that your own, the sense of self actually makes an effect in your life. Let's say, right? So just like talking, I want to take this to a different side of life. So today is Dakineo, right? And for Dakineo, we know that we're going to have arms. So imagine, on your plate, you have, the rice, you have the dal, you have the soya, you have the salad, the melum. Now, before you actually eat it, your mind perceives it. Agreed? But you actually eat second. Who eats first? You eat second. Who eats first? You eat second. Who eats first? The sense of self eats first. And here's my proof. The sense of self eats first and decides what this tastes like. Today the soya looks good. Today the paripu looks good. So the mind already, or the mind perceives, the sense of self already consumes. And so, what does the body do? See, the brain is just a muscle. The brain is so innocent, it's just a muscle. The brain just does what the mind tells it to do. That's all the brain does. So, like a great example would be, so let's say you have the chance of offering alms to the Mahasangha. You get the chance to offer alms. Even as you're offering, your sense of self, this self, this ego, may even consume the meal before you offer it. Therefore, the mind feels that you are what now doing? What are you doing right now? The sense of self is consuming. So the brain thinks what? I am eating. And therefore, what does the brain do? The brain has a reflex. Whenever it eats, it produces what? Saliva. That's why we salivate. Not because we see food. Because if it's the sight of food that makes us salivate, why does some food make us salivate more than others? For example, right? Say, you're walking down the street and you see a pile of rubbish. Do you salivate for rubbish? Well, they could be a half-eaten burger. That's food. But why don't you salivate? Because self thinks, no, this is not food. But for an animal, they see a large pile of trash. Like a raccoon, if they see a large pile of trash, they start to salivate, and they think, "Wow, today is, today I'm gonna eat until I'm full." But why don't we salivate? Because when the mind arises, ego doesn't eat it. But when you see food, especially good food that ego has already consumed before you eat it. The brain sends a signal to the brain. The mind consumes. The brain doesn't know, actually, I'm not consuming at this moment. So the brain produces what? Tells the body, produce saliva. And that's why we salivate. Not because of anything, because the mind eats before you do. Or no, ego eats before you do. Ego eats before you do. This is why they say, back in the past, the way they used to test whether someone became an arahant is by taking an orange or something that's very citrus, a citrus fruit, and peel it in front of them. If the mind consumes if the ego consumes the orange or the citrus fruit before they actually do, salivation will happen. In some stories you hear, the way they try to test if you're an arahant or not, they'll take a fruit and try to peel it in front of you. Or arahat or even anagami. So, this is the thing. Ego fits itself into any sort of position, puts itself into any position it can find possible, whether a balloon or whether in a process. It tries to put itself into a position where it feels as though it's there. It feels as though it's there. That's why, if I was to give this balloon to one of you and ask you to blow it, and if I was to pop the balloon right in front of you, even though it's a gift that I gave you, why do we still feel like, oh, that's not right? Why did we pop the balloon? Because at that very moment, you see a balloon. For example, I have balloons of several colors, right? I have white, I've got red, I've got green. Now, if I was to tell you that I'm gonna give one of these balloons away to some of you, already you already have an idea of which balloon you want. Ego's already chosen its balloon. And therefore, if you wanted the green and I give you the white, you'll still take it. You'll still take it. But in the mind, you think, just missed the green. But white is just as good, but I'd rather have the green. So even before I give it to you, you've already taken a balloon. Even before you talk to someone, you've already had the conversation. Before you talk to someone, you've already had that conversation, have you not? That's why you already have an expectation of what their answer is going to be. He's definitely going to say something like this. If I say, I've prepared, you hear like family feuds, right? If the wife thinks if I was to do this, the husband will feel like this, and I don't want him to feel like this, and they've already experienced it before it even happens. Why is that? Because ego puts themselves in every situation. Ego is something that lives in the past and the future. It very rarely takes place in the present. Present meaning not like the present, but this moment present, this pachupanna muhurta, this very precise moment. Instead, it lives in the future. Either you've already chosen your balloon, or you're thinking about the last time you blew a balloon. Either way, you're living not at this moment. You're living either in the past or the future. This is the thing. Ego fits itself into everything. The only way we can get rid of ego is by attacking it. If you are able to not give ego food for 7 days, the Buddha has guaranteed what? From 7 days to 7 years, the Buddha has guaranteed what? If you don't give ego food, he has guaranteed whether, at the very least, you'll be anagami. At very most, an arahant. But before you think about this, giving ego food, that's not too difficult. But when you truly look at it, ego fits itself into every nook and cranny possible. This is why you cannot attain Nibbana without teacher. I strongly believe that you cannot attain Nibbana without a teacher. You need to have a teacher. And, you know, you have to let the teacher change you. For example, you know, we all live in our comfort zones. There is something that makes that we have, that we make, or our ego feels as though this is who I am. I'm someone like this, I'm someone like that. But we should always be able to follow the teacher. Because ego is what? Ego is the idea that I am individual, I am different, I am special. But what? But with the teacher who is always willing to push yourself, push you one bit better, one bit different. That is a teacher that you should associate. So for example, tomorrow onwards, your teacher says, you know, you can no longer wear your patkara. Patkara, my patkara, you know, my prayer mat, that's the most important part. If your teacher says, you know, from today or tomorrow onwards, you can't wear the uttara salwar, the uttara salwar, I don't know what the English term for that. You can no longer wear that. Or you have to wear that. You should be able to say what? Of course. You should be able to say, of course. I will do that. If they say, you know, from today onwards, you know, you have to be bold, or you have to grow your hair. You should be able to say what? Of course. Because without a teacher, Nibbana is not possible. Without a teacher, you can never. I don't know. For me, I truly believe you can never attain Nibbana without a teacher. Without the environment, you can never attain Nibbana. Just like, you know, to have a fire, you need the environment of fuel, oxygen, temperature. For Nibbana, teacher is essential. And this is for not just you, because all of you, you know, you live and breathe in the monastery. You all have a teacher. But those of you who are online, who think, you know, Maybe I can try to attain Nibbana by myself. It's been tried. It's been tested. The only successful story I have ever heard is a story of Prince Siddhartha. But even he had a teacher, the Dhamma. So has there been any successful stories? Don't think so. So follow your teachers. Whatever your teacher says. Because what your teacher will always do is push you to do something that you are maybe uncomfortable with. Because if you feel uncomfortable, understand that's ego. Understand that's ego at play. This is who I am, someone who has to have my prayer mat with me. So if the teacher says, today onwards, no prayer mat. You should be able to do what? Take it off and say, my teacher says so. From tomorrow onwards, you know, you have to be... This is a beautiful story that I wanted to share with all of you. I was able to talk with a family, and the father of the family is someone who wasn't really interested in the Dhamma, right? He practices, he listens, but, you know, when the family wanted to come to the monastery, so they live abroad, when they wanted to come to the monastery, the father said, you know, I don't really want to go to the monastery. And the daughter, right, the daughter decides to say, and she tells me, the father tells me that the daughter came and said, Father, I will pay for every expense possible. And all she has was like her own small piggy bank where she's been like collecting some money. And she said, I'll pay for all the expenses. All I want you to do is to go to the monastery, the gate of the monastery, and just stand there. Don't do anything, but just stand there and just say Teruan Sang to every single person that goes by. That's all I want you to do. And how can the father say no to that? So the father said, fine, I'll come. Because, you know, that is a teacher. See, teacher doesn't have an age. Teacher is not a person. Teacher is a force. A teacher is a force. The teacher is nature. Let nature take control. Let nature take control. I mean, this is something that you, me, and every single person in this entire world needs to know. Let the teacher take control. I mean, it may feel that you're trying to say, okay, succumb to everything your teacher says. No, the teacher is someone who has taken a step further than you have. Knows already where you need to be. That's why, you know, you hear stories of, you know, you've probably heard the story of Thupi Jinpa, right? He preached to many hundreds of thousands of people, and, you know, thousands of people, turned thousands of people into arahants, but he himself was still, I think, Pratajana. And so when he was looking for his teacher, he found a 7-year-old person who was willing to be his teacher. Everyone else said, no. We can't be your teacher. You're our teacher. But the 7-year-old, Arahant, said, I'll be the teacher. However, I want you to walk straight into this river. And without a single question, I believe Bodhi Hamdaru was probably, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, maybe 8 times this small Samanera Arahantanwanse's age, probably 50, 60 years old. But he, no matter what, listened and started walking into this river, one step after the other, not turning back, right? The water gets deeper and deeper and deeper. You know, if you think about this, how many of us will actually be able to do something like that? Walk into a river just because someone, a 7-year-old, told you to. How many of you would walk into a river blinded? You don't know why, you don't know how, you're just going to walk because a 7-year-old told you. No. So this even the mindset of Bodhidharma is incredible. Walks. The water gets deeper and deeper and deeper. And when the water comes up to his nose, right, the small salmonella shouts, enough, come back. To test whether the student is ready to listen, is ready to do. Because remember, we are all here for one thing and one thing only. We are all here to attain nibbana, nothing else. We are here to attain Nibbana. Nibbana. Your Nibbana, my Nibbana, Nibbana. This is why we do everything that we do for Nibbana. You know, it's very easy to be sidetracked. Very easy. If you don't follow your teacher, it's very easy to be sidetracked. You know, you become a person who just does one thing. Right? I am someone who come to the monastery, I come to these programs, but I enjoy just doing this meritorious activity. And forgets that the main purpose of doing this meritorious activity is to attain Nibbana, not that I'm here to do this meritorious activity. We will always forget why we're here. This is why you need a teacher to remind you. You're here for Nibbana and Nibbana alone. Do everything for that. Yes, sir.
Teacher, mogul friend, sadgam, right view. Same thing,
open. Good question. So, teacher, noble association, what's the other ones?
Sadgam.
So, the Dhamma.
Right view.
Four things, same thing. So these are actually the same In my opinion, these four things are the same energy. These four things are the same energy. Whether your teacher and association are the same. And those things can only happen if they have the what? The Dhamma. And the last thing was the right view. All four of these are the exact same. So the Dhamma is the teacher. That can come from where? Come from anyone. And those people that you associate are your noble associations. And they are all the ones with the right view. This is why, you know, we should always remind ourselves that the people around us are always... Something that I do is always think of the people around me to be better than I am. To be, you know, one step better. Which means what? I'm always ready to what? To learn. Whether they are older, whether they're younger. Whether they're wiser, whether, you know, they haven't even, you know, started going to school. Each person has one quality that's better than I am. They're better than I have. So I'm always ready to learn. I mean, there is so much, you know, day by day, I realize there is so much I need to learn. That I can learn from others. So much. That every single person possesses. So each one of us, each and every one of us, has to be there, has to learn. Sir?
All those four, five words, can't we use pure energy?
Pure energy. You see, the way we use pure energy is... So in sermons, we use the word pure energy. That energy is the very basic energy that the entire universe is made from. Not made from. Entire universe is parts and parcels of this what we call pure energy. So it isn't pure energy. However, we can call this the energy of... Oh, you call it the Buddha energy, right? Yes, Buddha energy is also pure energy. However, the Buddha energy, or I think that's the best word, the Buddha energy, is the energy that changes fixed or changes all other energies back into pure energy. So it's the reverse, or is reversing the is reversing ignorance to get back into pure energy state. So I wouldn't really call it pure energy, because pure energy is everything. Pure energy is what is the basic energy that makes everything. Whether it's a pen, whether it's light, whether it's even a mind, is made from this so-called pure energy. But, you know, Kalyana Mitra, Saddhamma, this right view, is also part of pure energy. But more importantly, it's the Buddha energy. The energy that takes the mind back into its pure energy step. Back into pure energy. Does that make sense?
Yes. Instead of Buddha, can't we say it's a collection of virtues?
Of course, 100%. Because, you can say it's a collection of virtues. Because because the Buddha himself, or the Buddha energy, you can break down to individuals. Like we talked about, you know, dana being one of the perfections. The Buddha energy, dana is a perfection. And therefore, there are 10 perfections, you can say, parts and parcels of the Buddha energy. And those are the things that take us one step forward towards Nibbana. That's why, sila. Maybe in the future, we'll talk more about the sila as well. Sila, samadhi, prajna. Right? We're very focused on the wisdom side of things. But sila is just as important. Sila is our shield in our journey to Nibbana. It's what protects us from the weapons of Mara. So those are topics that I definitely wanted to touch upon in future discussions and sermons. So what I really want you to do is, you know, think of balloons. And the reason why I brought a balloon is because I could talk about balloons, But when you see a balloon, do you really understand that this is my lung? This is what this is. This is the lung. This is the voice. So now, whenever you talk, if you ever see, or whenever you go around and you see a balloon, see, I don't know, I've ruined lives. Now you can never enjoy a balloon because you see a balloon and think, oh, my voice is like a balloon, or my lungs are like a balloon. No, but that's the thing. Put it into practice. Actually understand the idea of this balloon. That speaking is a process of the balloon. The balloon voice. Because that's what it, that's what we have to do. Put into practice. That's why, you know. The more we practice, the more you realize that, you know, the practicing of the path isn't just, you know, meditating in a valley mudra. The practicing of the path is far more, you know, day to day, in every moment possible, practice. Because in the valley mudra, you don't talk, do you? In the valley mudra, right, you don't talk, you're not supposed to be talking. So how can you practice now? No, but still, you have to understand that talking is also what? Cause and effect. Put into practice. The more you put into practice, the more you're able to progress faster and free yourself and liberate yourself. So today is Dakshineya. So again, merits, we have lots of chances. I mean, our monastery is filled with so many events that we are able to do so many meritorious activities. We are very lucky, extremely lucky. Yeah. Last week we had what? This week we have what? The week before we had what? Every single week we have some sort of event where we can accumulate merits. Because merit is potential energy. And that potential energy can give rise to minds and give rise to the contemplation. So do as much merit as you possibly can so you can attain supreme bliss and nibbana. Let's take a moment to transfer the merits required, making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting pirith, listening to dharma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds today. So first and foremost, let's remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be and receive Lord Buddha's teachings. And with immense gratitude, let's transfer the merits to the Bhikshu Bhikshunis, Upasakas, Upasakas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teaching of the Buddha and passed it down to a generation of the noble lineage in form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, to understand, to comprehend the Dhamma. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits that we require to all the members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including all chieftains of all the chapters who have sacrificed their lives and dedicate their lives to no path, commend themselves to the betterment of all sentient beings. Not forget, among them will be the monks and nuns resident in local temples and nunneries who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to Guru Sanandanse, as well as other monks resident in the monastery, as well as the Anagarikas and Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let's take a moment to transfer merits and express our gratitude to those who make great efforts to disseminate the teaching of the Buddha, be thereby translated in sermon, share them with others, inviting others to join them. May the power of merits, if anything have been born in the world of planes, may they redeem themselves and be born in the bliss of plane. May by the power of merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble fourth path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. As well as anyone transfer merits required to our devotees, friends of the monastery, who for sake of merits continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery, to those of you who provide Mahasangha with shelter, arms, roads, medicines, as well as those who pass the no-hacks and their well wishes. May the power of the merits, if anything, born in the world of planes, may they redeem themselves and born in the bliss of plane. May the power of the merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble way for path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's take a moment to transfer merits to our mothers, fathers, husbands, wives, brothers, sisters, sons, daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews, nieces, our nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, employees, and to all those who have helped us, supported us, assisted us in any shape or form. By the power of the merits, may they be healed of physical and mental ailments, may they overcome any obstacles in their spiritual progress, may they abstain from meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble footpath, and attain supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Seeking one chance of marriage to devas, brahmins, spirits, demons. Primarily, Sakadeva was numerous gods and deities who committed to protect and fulfill some of the sasanam. Let's not forget among them will be our garden deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May the parliaments, may they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the meritorious deeds, before the meritorious deeds, before the noble footpath, and attain supreme bliss and nirvana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's take a moment to transfer amends to our ancestors who predeceased us, to all who been friends and family to us in this long journey in samsara. Let's take a moment to transfer amends to all those who lost their lives, all the members of the armed forces as well as the police force who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all those lost life in the war be the friend of her. Rejoice in the immense required today. Let's also take a moment to transfer amends to all those who lost their lives in natural calamities such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslide pandemics, reminding ourselves among them. For be those who have been friends of family to us in this even long journey in samsara, made by the power of the merits. If any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and born in the blissful plain. Made by the power of the merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain supreme bliss and nirvana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, it's all resolved. May the power of the blessing of all the merits acquired throughout the day. We have been a witness to the event of many hundreds of thousands of Arithanuanses, Arathmenuanses in this blessed land. And finally, with the power of all the merits acquired for the day, you and I and everyone who made this program a success become an Arithanuanse or Arathmenuanse in this very land, in this very life of the Supreme Buddha itself. And finally, to all the merits acquired today, you and I and everyone who made this program a success become an Arithanuanse or Arathmenuanse in this very life in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of Chibuchem be with you all. The members of the Mahasangha will now transfer the blessings to you. Raga ginnin mitetnva Dvesha ginnin mitetnva Moha ginnin mitetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukhita taravetnva Mamada siyalu loka siyalu satvayo Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukhita taravetnva Raga gini niveva Dvesha ghini niveva Moha ghini niveva Nivan sapa labeva Nivan sapa labeva Nivan sapa labeva Tonrange, Susyanatamanga Gunabiran, Siloka Sisatyama, Nibbana Pavasuke, Sutta.